Northwestern University receives a $480 million gift, the largest in the university's history. And I'll talk with Crane's residential real estate reporter Dennis Rodkin about news from the local housing market, including home price records, and a whole lot about properties on and around Lake Michigan.
People who haven't been to Miller, many of them have no idea it even exists. It's the only lakefront neighborhood of Gary. It's like this wonderful little beach island community. Many of the streets end at real high sand dunes. It's wonderful.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Thursday, September 23rd. When it comes to a professional like your doctor or lawyer, you want someone who knows you well. Wintrust believes you should have the same relationship with your banker, someone you can call directly and know they'll understand your concerns. Thousands of local business owners called their Wintrust banker when they needed Paycheck Protection Program loans. They called, Wintrust answered, and helped more than 11,000 local businesses secure funding. Learn more at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. Hi there, and welcome to Crane's Daily Gist Live, brought to you by Wintrust. I'm your host, Amy Guth, and I'm joined by Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin, as I am every week, here to talk about news of the week from the local housing market. Hey, Dennis, how's it going today?
Great. Amy, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Let's start with, the state of the housing market. We've been talking about kind of how it's been rising and increasing and gaining steam. What's happening today?
Just on Wednesday morning, we got some data that shows that the steam is starting to let up a little bit. That was expected.
Right.
A boom like we've been in really can't last at the size it's been. If you look at the numbers that came out September 22nd for the August real estate market, it looks as if home sales were down. That was data for August 2021, and they're only down from August 2020, which was insane.
Right.
So really, the housing boom has really reached a point where it just can't keep topping itself. Sales are down for the metro area, the nine county metro area, down 2.5% in August 2021 compared to August 2020. That doesn't seem great, but when you compare it, as I did, to the average for August sales between 2015 and 2019, which was a five-year run of normal years prior to 2020, sales in August are actually, home sales in the metro area are actually up 13.8% from that average, which is to say we're still in a sales boom. It's like we're running straight uphill and running out of breath. You're still running uphill, but you got to go a little slower because you're just not going to get up above August 2020 and the subsequent months. I'm going to say something like this a month from now, 2 months from now, and 3 months from now, because we're going to be in this situation. That was metro area sales. In the city, it looks like home sales are down 1.4% in August, but compared to that five-year average for August, they were up 4.7%. Both of those are pretty good. And if you get away from that five-year comparison, just look at August 2021 to August 2020, our declines, if that's what they are right in line with what happened with the nation. So, you know, the nation's housing boom, the Chicago and Chicago area housing boom, all sort of losing steam on sales.
For once, we're doing something lockstep with the nation. I feel like Chicago's always kind of done its own thing.
We are, and thank you for the segue, because on the other attribute, prices, we are not in lockstep with the nation. We're back to our old pattern. So this is another example of how we just can't beat 2020 in 2021. The median price of homes sold in August in the metro area was up 7.1%. In 2019, when you and I were sitting here, 2018, 2017, I'd have been saying, wow, that's really robust. But it comes after 12 months of home price increases that were every month up in the double digits, 10% or more, a few months up 15% or more, 1 month up 20%. So 7.1 looks weak, but you know, it's one of those things where you're driving 80 miles an hour. So my driving 70 miles an hour makes me look like I'm poking along in the slow lane.
Right.
That's for the metro. In the city, prices were flat. Median price was the same in August 2021 as in August 2020. And here's where we diverge from the nation. Nationwide, home prices were up 14.9. The median home price was up 14.9% in August from August 2020. And again, we were, our metro was up 7.1. So the boom hasn't, the huge run up in prices is continuing nationwide at a pace that we're not continuing at. Whether that's good or bad, what we're doing is something we could discuss at length, but it is clear that we're not continuing to run at the pace of the nationwide market.
I want to revisit a story we talked about last week. We were talking about New Buffalo and the idea of Airbnbs and Vrbo's and what was happening there. And there was kind of a proposal on the table to maybe stop all that short-term rental. What has happened since?
The story last week was about a meeting that was coming up the Thursday of that week. That was postponed. Tuesday night of this week, the New Buffalo Planning Commission, at the request of the New Buffalo City Council, considered two ordinances that would have limited the spread of Airbnbs, VRBOs in New Buffalo, and rejected both. I attended virtually, and it was sort of one of those things where I kind of felt like I could write the story right when the meeting started, because it's a five-member panel, and they basically, from the start, said, yeah, we're not passing either of these. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean that they're saying, let's allow the sort of uncontrolled spread of Airbnbs in New Buffalo. What they said very, very clearly was, we don't have enough data. The people who want to limit the growth or stop all short-term rentals in New Buffalo generally say that there are a lot of nuisance factors. There's noise, litter. They're also jacking up the prices of homes in town so that a local can't really afford it if they're buying to live there and not have a revenue stream coming out of it. So the planning commissioners said, really, one at a time, each one of them said, we need data on all that. So they rejected, I don't know if we want to go into the specifics of what the two proposals were, but one would have stopped all new short-term rental permits in the town. The other would have stopped all new permits just in the one type of zoning where they're most common in town. All three are residential zoning areas. Short-term rentals are allowed in places that aren't zoned residential, that are zoned commercial. So that wouldn't have changed. But both of these were voted down, one unanimously, 4-1. And as I said, the commissioners made it very clear, really from the start of the meeting, we're not passing either of these. Their total discussion of those two ordinances, I don't think was longer than, I'm going to say, 35 minutes. And these are very complicated issues. And I think that was a sign that they came in ready to say no to any of this. It did then go on for quite a while with comment from local citizens. Many of them clearly changed their comments when they saw how the board went. So the one thing we do know is this is not the end of this battle in New Buffalo. First of all, the city council, though the city council asked the planning commission to look at these two ordinances and the planning commission said no to both, that doesn't mean that the city council can't say, well, okay, that's fine for you, but we still want number one, or we still want number two, or that they don't say, all right, then here's another one we want you to look at. So I expect that we're going to be back on this topic quite a bit in the next few weeks.
So let's go to Miller Beach now.
Oh, beautiful there.
I'm only hoping the weather is better than it is in Chicago, because it's mighty gloomy here today. But let's go there and talk about home sales in that area and what's going on.
Yeah, well, so part of the whole idea that Miller Beach is beautiful is it's a well-kept secret. People who've been to Miller love it. I'm one of them. People who haven't been to Miller, many of them have no idea it even exists. It's the only lakefront neighborhood of Gary. Actually, it was a separate municipality, and it is in a lot of ways separate from Gary. Not only is it on the beach, but it's surrounded by green space. So it's like this wonderful little beach island community. Many of the streets end at real high sand dunes. It's wonderful. And it's part of that whole Indiana, Lake Michigan coastline that if people don't know, they should stop listening now, get in their cars and go look. And one of the houses there is this one that just sold for $1 million. It's the first $1 million home sale in Gary and also in specifically in Miller Beach. The previous record was in the 800,000s sold in the summer of 2020. So we're really seeing that run up. And this has a lot to do with what you and I have discussed. People are buying homes We've talked about the beachfront communities. We've also talked about purchases in places like Valparaiso and sort of the inland parts of Northwest Indiana from people who are getting out of Chicago, either full-time or part-time. This house happens not to be the case. I called the real estate agent because $1 million in Miller caught my eye and I checked and it was a record. And the real estate agent told me that neither buyer nor seller in this case was a Chicagoan, could not say who they were, but they could be Michiganders, they could be people from South Bend, we don't know. But they paid $1 million to live essentially right on the water. You leave their backyard, you walk through, I don't know what the exact term is, but I think of it as the low dunes, the grassy dunes, as opposed to the huge high ones that are just a few blocks away here, and right out to the water. And I couldn't tell, I didn't go to this house, from some parts of Miller's lakefront, you can actually see Chicago's skyline. I don't know if that's the case from this house, but that would be an extra cool attribute, I think.
What a cool area that you could see the skyline potentially and have all this beautiful lake and lakefront and dunes and all that.
Yeah. And be in real dunes, like high dunes, the sort of thing that if you send pictures of dunes in Indiana or Michigan to your friends in California, they say, oh, come on, there are dunes on Lake Michigan. But out here, they're out around Miller and other parts of the coastline, there really are beautiful dunes. So if you're in Miller Beach, you're in this wonderful little, I mean, it's such a beach infused sort of a place. And this house built in the 1920s, well, I think is just really charming. And I'm sorry, I didn't have $1 million to buy it for myself.
I know, right? Because I would have come to visit you and sat on that pretty all season back porch there all the time. We would be broadcasting from there right now.
Yeah, bring your kayak. We'll broadcast from our kayaks.
You know, I feel like we've mentioned kayaks enough that now I think we have to do that. We're going to have to do a podcast from a kayak. What could go wrong with electronic equipment and water? What could go wrong?
Should I start counting? Let's see.
Indeed. All right. Well, we've got a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright to talk about this week also. So let's start with a house in Glenview that sold at auction for just a little over $1 million. Tell me about this one.
You know, this one is fascinating. I first wrote about it in 2014 when the woman who had owned it, the woman who with her late husband had owned it since the mid-1960s, was getting ready to sell it. She was older. I was so impressed. It's got a flat roof. And after our interview, it was fall. And after our interview, I think she was in her late 70s. She was headed up onto the roof to sweep the leaves off the roof. I mean, it was amazing. It's set out in the woods. And ultimately what she determined is she didn't want to move out of the house until her life was over. So the property then didn't go up for sale until 2020. Wonderful old place, late in Wright's career. It has these textile blocks that are textile block cutouts that are sort of shaped like oak leaves and you're set in the oak leaves. It's really cool. Went up for sale in 2020, didn't sell, price came down, finally went up for auction. Even the auction ended up being delayed, I believe, because nobody hit the minimum bid. Finally, it sold just recently at auction for a little over $1 million. It was $1,060,000. And it had started at, when it first went on the market, it was up around $1.3 million. Really a great place, stuck out there in the woods. It's a piece of land that attaches to the Grove, which if you know it is a wonderful natural area with an enormous amount of history in Glenview. And the owners of this house had been part of the group that saved the Grove from development. And so you would basically leave your property and go right out into this phenomenal wilderness. Somebody's going to get a chance to do that. I don't yet know who the buyer is. I'm assuming for the moment that it's somebody who will rehab the house. If we were to find out that it's a developer who's tearing it down, I will be the first one to throw my body in front of the plow, the wrecking ball.
The plow, the bulldozer, whatever houses. Right.
There we go.
All right. Well, let's talk about another Frank Lloyd Wright. So this is kind of a cool dual story, right? Because there's a couple that is rescuing a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Hinsdale, but they have already rehabbed another one. Is that right?
They have, or they're nearly done rehabbing another one. One of the things about it is it doesn't look like a Frank Lloyd Wright house to most people. It's very, very early in his career. It's the, is it 1894? So I reported back in the early summer that this was coming on the market and people were concerned that it would be torn down.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, much larger houses, much, much larger houses are all around it. The assumption was a developer would try to get it and take it down. Well, that's not what anybody wanted, including the sellers. And the Frank Lloyd Wright Conservancy, Frank Lloyd Wright Building Conservancy, sent out an alarm, basically, hey, can anybody buy this? A couple in Cincinnati who are not yet done with about a five-year restoration of a really interesting Frank Lloyd Wright house there flew out to Hinsdale, looked at this and said, yeah, we'll take it. And what they told me is because, you know, they've got a million in one and a million in another one. It sounds like she said, we're not crazy rich people. We're just crazy people. Because they love the right stuff. They only bought the one in Cincinnati. They bought the one in Cincinnati, not really as aficionados. She has become one because she's now started taking architectural history classes and that sort of thing. And the really sort of cool thing about their portfolio of Wright houses is the one they have in Cincinnati is from very close to the end of his career. And this one in Hinsdale is from very close to the beginning of his career. And she said she thinks they're probably the only people with that kind of holding. They are not Hinsdalians. They're not even Chicagoans. They don't really have ties here, but they toured Hinsdale and they decided that for now, when this is restored, it'll be their second home. But you know, it's also possible that after a multi-year renovation, that they make another choice and they decide to sell it. They don't yet have a budget for what they're going to. Well, first of all, they don't even have a design for what they're going to do. They're working with a prominent architect here, Gunny Harbo, on what they will do to restore the house. And then that begets a budget. But she said it's likely to be, you know, the other one, the one in Cincinnati is costing them considerably more than they expected. And that's likely to happen here too.
But I do love that it feels like this, like they're bookends of his career.
Yeah.
They have an early one and a late one. That's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you have obvious, so she said they're not crazy rich people, but clearly they have the means to do this. And if you're going to be a house collector, that's sort of an interesting way to do it, is to say, this is right when he's starting out. And he's doing certain things. She talks about how he was sort of extending geometrical forms in this house. And then here he is at the end of his career when he's doing these, we don't have a picture of it, but one of the concrete block houses, it has a relationship with Mayan temples, which he was sort of inspired by later in his career. And it's flat roofed. It's really cool. The two houses couldn't look less alike. But they have the Frank Lloyd Wright connection between them. They're 300 miles apart.
I feel like there's a book in here somewhere. Like maybe she'll write the book. She's been taking all these architecture classes. But I think that's just an interesting story.
That would be interesting. And she's a former filmmaker, so she's probably prone to writing things.
Oh, I don't have to encourage her. She's probably already writing that story, a screenplay or book or something. Now let's talk about a place in Lincoln Park with two kitchens,
Yeah. One's inside and one's outside.
I love it. Let's do it. I'm into that.
Yeah. They really sort of bookend each other, like these Wright houses bookend his career. The inside one, if I'm standing at the island of the inside kitchen and cooking, I can be looking at you at the grilling station of the outdoor kitchen. The outdoor kitchen, I think, is in a way more impressive than the indoor. The indoor kitchen is very nice. It's what we often see in these $6 million mansions. It's beautiful. But the outdoor kitchen sits under this wonderful pavilion roof. It's got a curved metal roof, like a bandstand in an old Victorian park or a subway station, but bigger. And so you've got these two kitchens facing each other, but you also have just exquisite finishes in many places. When they bought the house, they then commissioned Chinese silk wall covering maker to do these beautiful silk wall coverings for their staircase and for their living room. Really just wonderful finishes. Much of the rest of it, if it had colors, has been painted white to sell. They're selling, they moved here from London. They moved to here and Miami from London. They didn't really have roots here. The man had family. He has died. And so his widow, who doesn't have as much of a connection here, has put it on the market. But one of the things she said is, you know, they bought it in 2007, and it was this nice, wonderful, it's on that Burling Orchard and Howe area where there are giant mansions. And it reminded her a lot of parts of London with the big stately homes. But she said that during the COVID period, it was also a good place to be because she said I didn't, even though they had bought because they could walk to restaurants and they could walk to theaters, when you couldn't do that, she had cooking indoors and outdoors. She had a gym. She had a movie theater. It's really nice. It's $6 million. So of course, only the tip of the market can buy it, but it's just really well done.
Indeed, the outdoor kitchen is very lovely, but the indoor kitchen is not too shabby either.
You can really feel summer because that's when the photos were taken. But in the winter, I mean, you know, if you live in Lincoln Park, well, if you live in Chicago and love winter, you know, this is the kind of place that would be really great. You could sit out on that balcony, look at the snow in your backyard.
Or just stay inside and avoid it altogether.
And if,
just look at your pretty silk walls.
Our different approaches to winter.
Avoid it. That's the Guth way.
jump into it. That's the Rodkin way.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk about a house in Glencoe owned by a Fox Sports executive that has sold. Tell me about this place.
One of the newsworthy things about this is that they bought it in 2007 and sold it last week for more than $500,000 less. We know, of course, that 2006, 2007 was peak pricing, especially in the mansion markets. It still is noteworthy when somebody sells at this kind of a loss. It was built new then. And what the selling agent told me is you can't do better in Glencoe's mansions on location because three doors down is Lake Michigan. And Glencoe, if you haven't seen Glencoe's beach, it's this wonderful sort of, it's based on the Riviera. You go down a slope and there are these beautiful little buildings and a pier. So it's three doors from that in one direction, and it's just a few blocks in the other direction from cute, adorable little downtown Glencoe with shops and restaurants and Starbucks and a train station. So you're living in this very fine home, but walkable to two really great amenities.
A lot of pretty detail in this house. Again, here's a wood paneled room with beautiful ceiling detail.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that wood paneled library doesn't seem to go out of style. I think I said that it sold for $500,000 less than they bought it for, but I don't think I said how much that was. They bought it for $3.5 million in 2007, and they sold it for $2.72 million, considerably more than $500,000, in 2021.
All right, now let us go to Edgewater and talk about a beach house up on the seventh floor.
Yeah, so we've spent a lot of time talking about Lake Michigan.
Yeah, we have.
So far today. I love it. I think you love it. And the people who did this condo really love it. One of them stand up paddleboards, the other surfs in Lake Michigan. They bought this condo right on Sheridan Road. It's an interesting building. It's called, is it called East Point? I think it's called East Point. It's on Sheridan Road, and everybody who's driven or ridden a bus up Sheridan Road knows it's lined with high rises. But this one is really sort of east of all the others. It sits well back from Sheridan Road. So their windows, from their windows, you're looking out and down right to Lake Michigan, not to like a parking lot or whatever. And they redid it. The building was built in the 60s. The owners of this condo had been the same from that time until just a few years ago. It had, I think they said it had purple wallpaper and flocked wallpaper, and there might've been some painted ceilings. So they were going to do a rehab anyway, but because Lake Michigan is there, because they're so beachy themselves, I described this as a beach house, but on the seventh floor. I mean, this feels like a rental you might get in San Diego.
Absolutely.
Sand colors, sky colors, crisp, clean white. They did a couple of really cool things. A lot of what they did is brighten it and that sort of thing. There's a little breakfast room that is sort of stuck off as an ear off the kitchen, and it had a view of the lake. The two bedrooms are on the lake is on the east side of the building. The two bedrooms are on the west side of the building with no view. So they cut a hole in the wall of one of the bedrooms to basically borrow that breakfast room view of the lake. So in that one bedroom, you're looking both west at the buildings around you along Sheridan Road and east at the lake. And you never could before. They couldn't do this with the primary bedroom because there's other stuff in the way. But one of the things they said is that it's like being in a boat.
To have such an airy space looking out over the water and you're just high enough that you're kind of skipping the city. I absolutely feel what they're saying about this feels like a boat. It does.
One of the things about being on the seventh floor is they see far out over the lake, which is nice, but they also still hear it. You know, they're not so far up that they can't hear the waves, which, you know, for Chicagoans is just one of the great pleasures, is hearing Lake Michigan when it's in motion, which is not every day.
And of course, photos were taken on a perfect lake day.
Yeah, you know, so I said earlier the thing about if you send pictures of the Indiana dunes to your friends in California and other places, they can't believe it. So the seller of this one said a lot of times people come in and they say, where am I? Am I in Puerto Vallarta?
Yeah.
And I think to me, here we are talking at the very beginning of fall when it's about to change. Summer in Chicago, like that is summer in Chicago. Those of us who love Lake Michigan, who this is what it's like to live here. It'll look different when there's 12 feet of ice on the lake's edge.
And it's all icebergs. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still going to be cool to look at it from that height.
It will still look very cool. And you know, I mean, anytime you're looking at social media, I feel like I know a lot of people that live up in that neighborhood that post just very cool photos year round of the lake doing cool things. So,
yeah, especially from a building like this that is pushed so that it's right on the edge of the water.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's coming up in the week ahead, Dennis?
My vacation.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry, I should have warned you before we started. I leave on vacation on Friday.
That's right.
Not only will I not be here next week, but there won't be real estate stories for you to talk about.
How will I go on?
I think that's your chance to do a live stream of you kayaking.
Not without you. No way. Well, we'll figure it out somehow. Enjoy your vacation and we will see you when you come back. Thanks so much, Dennis.
Thanks,
I appreciate you. All right. And thanks to Rob Garcia, who produces this live stream. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, Wintrust. Coming up, O'Hare Airport ranked last in a J.D. Power customer satisfaction survey. And Midway did only slightly better. We'll talk about that and more right after this. In these uncertain times, it's important to have people you trust by your side. When 11,000 local business owners needed a Paycheck Protection Program loan, they turned to their Wintrust banker to secure funding, because that's a relationship they can count on. Businesses are navigating some of the biggest challenges they will ever face. Wintrust is here to answer their calls. They'll answer yours too. Start the conversation at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC.
This is the Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
Northwestern University received a $480 million gift from supporters Patrick and Shirley Ryan, and that's the school's largest donation to date. But even before this gift, the Ryans were already Northwestern's biggest donors. The gift came as part of the school's fundraising campaign and pushed the total raised by the campaign to more than $6 billion. The funding from the Ryan family will support education and research in microeconomics, business, digital medicine, neuroscience, and global health. And it will go toward an effort to revamp the family's namesake Ryan Field, making the stadium more environmentally friendly and accessible for people with disabilities. Amalgamated Bank of Chicago, founded nearly a century ago by organized labor, is selling to its larger New York-based namesake. The New York Amalgamated Bank is acquiring the holding company of the Chicago Bank for $98.1 million in cash. And though both banks were formed in the early 1920s by the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America and have similar strategies, they actually aren't affiliated. With $6.3 billion in assets as of the end of June, the New York-based bank's balance sheet is far larger. It went public in 2018 and has branches in Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, in addition to New York. The Chicago bank has $950 million in assets, including $519 million in loans. Its customer base includes more than 900 unions, and they account for more than 57% of deposits and 12.5% of loans. Combined, the banks will have about $7.6 billion in assets and a substantial trust business. The deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter. U.S. employers aren't just having a hard time hiring workers, they're increasingly struggling to keep them. Data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that turnover is getting worse across certain sectors and types of jobs, with quit rates at record highs in healthcare and retail. For employers, it means higher pay to keep workers from leaving and lower revenue because of the lack of staff, and sign-on bonuses and other incentives that many businesses are offering to attract applicants are fueling churn. Bloomberg reported that workers in high-demand sectors are now getting poached, and the record number of job openings gives them the power to shop around for better wages, more flexible hours, or simply more enjoyable work. For workers who stay in their jobs, however, elevated churn often means having to pick up the slack for the lack of staffing, increasing the chance of burnout and stress, and leading to more turnover. The Federal Reserve's latest beige book listed several examples across the country of how retaining workers is a growing issue for businesses. Bloomberg also reported that one metalworking firm told the Cleveland Fed that a quarter of its staff had been with the firm for 3 months or less, and a company in the hospitality sector told the San Francisco Fed that nearly half of its new workers leave after 1 to 2 months. In the latest J.D. Power customer satisfaction study, O'Hare Airport finished last among the largest airports in North America, and Midway ranked 15th among 20 of its peers. As Crane's John Pletz reported, one of the culprits for O'Hare, like other airports, likely was the lack of availability of restaurants and other amenities. Airport concession operators and other vendors have struggled to maintain staffing as the economy started to reboot and more passengers began to fly once vaccinations became available. Overall, U.S. air travel is currently at about 82% of pre-pandemic levels, according to TSA data. In early April, it was at about 66%. The top-ranked large airports in the survey were Miami International and New York's JFK. Are you or do you know a high-performing mid- to senior-level leader looking to enhance your leadership acumen in new ways? If so, then Crane's Academy is for you. You'll break out of your routine, exchange insights with thought leaders, and discover innovative ways to impact positive results immediately. Fall virtual sessions start on September 29th. Visit cranesacademy.com today to learn more and apply or nominate. And that's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Our continuous news feed lives at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to my guest today, Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin. You can follow all of our conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your on-demand audio. And remember to rate and review Crane's Daily Gist because that's the best way for others to discover our episodes. You'll also find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.